All right, everybody, listen, I told you before when I started to do these new chats, when I started to do this new season, I'm going to hit you back to back to back to back with people I find interesting, people I dig, people I know you will dig. And the streak continues with old friend, returning guest, longtime Twitter buddy, Mr. Michael Salamo.
Hello, sir.
And how are you doing, my friend? You know, the last time we talked, It was a while ago because I hadn't done chats in a while. And every time something happens in the news, literally every time something happens in the news, especially something weird, I wonder what you're sitting there thinking.
Well, just picture me with steam coming out of my ears, and that should sum up everything since we last spoke. Because I believe the last time we caught up was before the Trump era began. So, yeah, just picture steam coming out of my ears and tears from my eyes. And that sums up my existence.
because it was to me, because I was saying to someone during that process, they're going, there's no chance. And I'm going, yeah. I said, how many times have you seen a football game where one team is supposed to win? They assume they're going to win. They let the other team hang around too much and too long, and they wind up losing on a field goal, and everybody's wondering, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And that's exactly, I mean, come on. I mean, you know, that's pretty much what happened.
I really was in the camp of, oh, well, even if it's going to go that way, they'll flub it up. I mean, something sinister will happen to keep this lunatic out. Boy, was I wrong. Yeah. Sorry to listeners who don't think he's a lunatic. You're wrong.
Well, for truth be told, probably if that is the case, it would probably be in the low single digits of the people that have heard me speak for the past, you're episode 101, to give you on this podcast, just to give you an indication of what I'm talking about. So,
wow. You've done 100 of the interview show already. That's amazing. You are so prolific. Yeah. How many episodes of your solo show are there now?
414.
Wow. So now over 500 total. That's crazy.
Yeah, but this podcast is not all. First of all, thank you very much. I appreciate that. But this podcast has been, see, in the beginning I had guests, and then there was a stretch where I couldn't get guests, because you know, nobody had heard the show. I mean, regular people, the audience had heard the show, but other people hadn't heard the show, and so it was a bunch of me doing other things while I waited to get guests, and. And now I've got more and more guests. It's a weird thing. And I didn't even realize or didn't stick in my mind how many episodes I had done until you just asked me, which is like, I'm not full, you know, and it's actually a little bit more than that, because there's been special editions that I like to throw in every once in a while. I don't know why I have problems.
Well, you've got stick-to-itiveness, which I've got a podcast. Mostly we talk current events or politics, and there are, you know, I just get sick of it. I get sick of political podcasts in general, and I don't want to be a part of that scene. So I'll go a couple months without doing it, a year without doing it happened. So it's always amazing to me that a guy like you can crank out 2 episodes a week, and at least from listening to them, I don't feel that you're sick of it like I get.
The funny thing about it is, every once in a while, even if you like to do something, everything except maybe getting it on, you need to take a break. You know what I mean? You know, because I've never gone to a girlfriend, listen, I know that feels incredible, but I needed to calm down a little bit. get off me. You know, I've never actually said that. You know, but this thing here, man, if you are the kind of person that does, because I like politics, obviously, so do you. And it's always interesting to me because even as a little kid, I used to watch the presidential elections. And even as a child, you know, high single digits up until double digits, I was fascinated by watching the country swing in one direction. I didn't articulate it that way back then, obviously, but watching it swing in one direction and swing to the other direction, swing. But it always seemed to have maybe a little bit, at least a finger on the center. You know what I mean? It was like when you have a group of people that are putting their hands on a car and you can't take, whoever takes their hands off last gets the car.
You know? Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, it was kind of like that. But this is the time it was like the hand was ripped off, you know, and the person was just drop kicked across the room because I could feel it. It felt, and I'm in New Jersey. I mean, it just, and you know, in Philadelphia and whatnot, it felt, and even in this enclave, Northeast, it still, I could feel it. I could feel it being the country being a little bit different. So I can only imagine at the time when it was beginning to happen, what the rest of the country, the middle of the country, started to feel like. Because if it felt weird here, I was like, oh God, this is going to be ugly.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, at least in my view, I think a majority of white folks, at least based on polling, were all for it. We're into it. I mean, and that includes white women from polls I've seen. So a great divide, at least, was shown to me of, whoa, this person and I aren't on the same page at all. And when pandemic hit, I went back to my hometown. I'm in rural New York State. Mm-hmm. And even now, I'll take these long drives in the country and I'll see like Trump 2024 flags or still my president signs. Mm-hmm. And really, it makes me think of those old, what was that horror movie where they go to the Deep South and everybody's a racist? Do you remember what, you know what I'm talking about? Like 70s movie?
It was called Every Day of the 70s. And the 60s, okay, and 50s.
So I'm driving around every day of your experience and just realizing that, you know, we've heard A Tale of Two Americas and expressions like that our whole lives. I think we're similar in age. Mm-hmm. But it really became evident that there are far different views of where we should be headed. Is that a multicultural democracy, which I would argue we're still not at after all these years, or is it back to segregationalism? And I think there's a large chunk of people in this country that want that. And that's scary to me, mm-hmm. Very scary to me. But you mentioned the hand on the car. I'm going to just totally curveball here. That's the only screenplay I ever pitched was a love story based around one of those contests where they have to touch the car. And in this case, they were inside the car. They had to stay in the car, whoever the longest won the car. Mm. Sorry.
This screenplay that you're talking about, is it real time? I mean, the whole 90 minutes they'll literally be in the car, or is that the hand on the car, a flashback, a culmination? How would you do that? Cause you know,
the concept was that half the film is real time and then it goes absurd with how long this goes, that people are willing to live in a car, like it's a radio DJs kind of narrate and are at the center of the contest. And at some point they're having to come up with ways to get people food into the bathroom because nobody will leave the car, but it's a love story.
It better be. You're not dealing with somebody you don't love over there.
I'm willing to pitch that again if anybody's listening. It's the pages are here. It's ready to go. And in these COVID times, you know, we're probably going to have another major outbreak and shutdown again because nobody's taking Delta seriously. So, you know, this is an easy one. You can make it with your pod. Throw me some money. We can talk.
This is just a weird thing. When I was talking to somebody else about this, when it seems to be, there'll be little spaces of time. We have our little tragedies, and I shouldn't say little, but little in comparison tragedies, and our little in comparison news stories, and our little in comparisons things that affect many little pieces of people. You know, you see it on the news, somebody gets shot, somebody gets sick, and it's horrible. But there'll be these periods of time between these big, gigantic things that affect everybody, you know, because normally when a president comes in, it affects you, but you don't, it's not like it's punching you in the face every 5 seconds, you know, or with COVID, it's like all of a sudden, everybody's affected, you know, it's just, you can't, there's certain things you just can't escape. You couldn't escape certain things that the previous guy was doing. Because it was in your face, it changed the culture. People were mean. You actually, I've actually seen people get into fights, you know, because of one guy thinking one thing and one guy thinking another thing. And I really don't remember anybody getting into fights in front of, you know, because of what Barack Obama said. He said what? Crack. I never saw any of that. I doubt we'll see any with this dude, but you know. I just watched these COVID. You would figure that something like this would wake people up, but you know it's not. Like you just said, it's not. Everyone's going to have that. Everyone's going to drop their guard, and then COVID 24 will come around. You know, and we'll be sitting there with days like, "What are you doing?"
Well, I mean, that's at least what looks like is going to happen in England this week. Is that they're going to have to do another shutdown because that Delta variant. And it's here, so it's only a matter of time because we're reopening. And I mean, you saw, I think you probably saw, most people showed up that story about the cashier or store she works at. Mm-hmm. The rule is still the customers have to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. She told a customer that he came back and killed her with a gun. I mean, America's just really divided. And people are nuts. I'm sorry. I don't mean to diagnose or to belittle mental health issues, but I don't know how to better sum up what's going on with folks who just believe every conspiracy theory that comes their way, other than they need deprogramming and they need counseling, in my opinion, of course.
it's an interesting thing as someone who was literally raised my mother was one of those people who told me when she was a kid she had a teacher that did an experiment in their class, and it was to trick the children into thinking one way, and then she cut it down, she stopped it, and she made a point of letting them know you did what you did because you weren't thinking. And she was taught critical thinking. So she had that in her way before I was born. And I was taught to be a critical thinker from the beginning, not to be a pessimist, not to be a contrarian, but a critical thinker. I will look at information and I will gather information, research, and then I'll make an opinion based on that. So when someone comes up with the kind of things that these people are believing, first of all, I'm not stupid. So 99.9% of the time I could debunk it instantaneously. Because it's stupid. And I mean, some of the things I'm hearing, I'm going, did you go to science class at all? Did you do any? Did you have any?
Oh, like that magnetism lady. I think John Oliver summed it up. Humans are gross. Sometimes we're sticky. The vaccine's not magnetizing anybody, you just happen to have some sweat where you stuck a key to you.
I said, was it the vaccine or was it the gum in your purse?
You're so right. I mean, critical thinking skills and media literacy skills are more important than ever. And of course, we're going for a year that kids got barely any education at all, but this is an education that really should be mandatory. I mean, we've got people trying to make critical race theory illegal when it should probably be mandatory, in my view. Mm-hmm. But we've got to go back to the basics with folks and make sure that they can think for themselves critically and realize that when they're taking in media, it's a product and it's going to be a viewpoint of a company, and how to dissect what's information and what's propaganda. And that is on all ends of the spectrum. Not, I picked on the right wing since Mr. S. Anthony's had me on quite a bit, but it comes from both sides, or all sides, I should say. And you have to be able to take in this information and realize what is just pure information and what's being spun. We've been talking about spin doctors since the 90s band, but we've never really talked about what they do to public opinion. And I think a big part of the divide that we were talking about comes from what information we blindly take in when we shouldn't take any information in blindly.
It's all
bent. And soapbox.
It's all it's like it's all bent. You know, it's like light. As soon as it touches something, it bends a little bit. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, yeah. it bends. Sometimes it bends and lights up a room, and sometimes it burns your eye, kills some ants. You know, it depends on the lens that it's coming through, but it right. bends. You know, I mean, you know, it's like information is literally like the ray from the sun. It's 93 million miles away. By the time it gets here, it's bounced off a few things, you know, you know. Then it hits the atmosphere and it diffuses. It turns into all it. That's what happens with information coming from the radio, from the news, from the internet. Once it starts moving, it every time it touches somebody, it bends a little bit, and it's on you to actually follow it back. And the smarter you are, the more savvy you are, the further you can leap in the direction of the source. But everybody has to do a little bit of research. I mean, you know, if you've been on the internet a long period of time, as we both have. We're both not, neither one of us is a very young guy, obviously. I'm 52, you know, so my BS meter is pretty, pretty sensitive, you know. You know, even though I tend to be diplomatic when I speak with someone, even if it's someone who's vehemently against what I believe and they're coming at me with aggression, I sit back and I assess the information, because sometimes information will come from a bad source, but the information is accurate. So I'll listen.
Yes.
I'll listen to you. Hey, you libtard. You know, and I'll sit there and it really bothers people when I don't return the favor because I don't want to. You know, it's like I'd rather have a conversation. I don't want to yell at you. I don't want to do that. I mean, I'm not talking to a child. You know what I mean? And I don't even yell at children, you know, but.
I'm just now in my 40s, but I'm old enough to know, to remember when we had basically the three networks. NBC was GE, CBS was Westinghouse. I honestly don't know who had ABC, but you just kind of assumed, well, if I'm watching NBC, Tom Brokaw's telling me GE, General Electric's major weapons manufacturer, this is their point of view. Like I feel like I knew that as a kid. And I don't know that people do the same. They turn in MSNBC and realize, well, okay, this is Comcast, or turn on CNN and, well, this is AT&T. Are people thinking about things like, okay, this is the point of view of this telecommunications company? I don't know if everybody is aware of that, but that's how, as a kid, I came into watching news. I don't know if that was a universal truth, but that's how I understood it, is it's coming from a perspective. So when like Fox came along and it was this right-wing Australian family, it wasn't too hard to just be like, okay, well, this is whose viewpoint that is, and realize that it's not going to be factual. It's this viewpoint. Do you think people, pardon to interview the interviewer, but do you think people have a finger on the pulse of that all media is owned? It's not like a public service.
I think a lot of people do. But the thing is, if you have such a devastating bias yourself, it that changes how you react to the information. You can look at it objectively and go, okay, these things are all skewed in one direction or another. Or you can think, these things are all skewed in one direction or another, and they're also eating bats, drop kicking children out the window, and you know, you know what I mean. So they go all the way to the other side with the same information, because nobody trusts the media. I mean, nobody trusts them, you know, and nobody believes everything that they say. There are people that are pretty good, that are closer to accurate, you know. But you have a point of view. I have a point of view. You know, your life experience makes you see one thing, my life experience makes me see one thing, And that holds true to the other 340 million people, you know, in the country.
Right, right, right.
And so I mean, they'll see that everybody, I mean, it's an opinion. The people that are on the other side of the screen are made of, they're carbon-based life forms just like I am. So they're not, they don't have any special powers. They just have access to information and they're going to adjust it based on who is going to bring the most buttocks and eyeballs to the television. You know, I know this. So I don't get shocked. I've been shocked the past couple of years because of the way people have been behaving in their everyday lives. But I haven't been shocked by, you know, I'm not going to even use the guy's full name because I can't stand his ass. But Tuck, that's as far as I'm going to say. But I'm wondering if he's going to Beck, if you understand what I'm saying. Because remember when Beck was going crazy on TV, he just kept going further and further and further and further. And even that network went, you know what? Even we think you went too far. You know.
But I think he lost advertisers. Like he was having cash for gold advertising, and the current white supremacist in chief, Mr. Carlson, is the number one viewed cable program. Mm. So he's not hurting for advertisers, and it amazes me that so many people are tuning in to what I equate to a dumpster fire.
Well, I think you're going to actually get a cease and desist from dumpster fires.
We don't want to be associated with that crap. Yeah.
I'm curious because I see it's really weird because I think back then, you know, there was kind of more of a line that you couldn't cross. Even it took a while to get to it, but I think that line has been pushed back a little bit. And also, I think a lot is, maybe you know this, I'm assuming that if that particular network is on the cable, that they got to be getting a big chunk of bread from the, you know, like $3 for the station instead of a dollar or something like that. You know, from the cable provider to the cable provider. Because, you know, when you get those packages, you know, HBO's worth $2 and TNT's worth $1 and this one's worth 75 cents. If it's getting ratings like that, maybe that's why they don't give a crap. Because it's like, look, we're still getting the money because the cable has to give us $3 for every subscriber. So we really don't give a crap about what this knucklehead says.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, I have a satellite package and every once in a while I'll lose one of my local stations because the deal they have with that satellite provider isn't to somebody's liking, but I never lose things that I would love to lose, like Fox News or even I'd be great with losing MSNBC. There's never any contract negotiations there, but I'm guessing that because ad revenue would be so much bigger for a network that money isn't as important as it would be to a local news station. But that's just theory. I have no real knowledge of how that works. But my understanding of network television or cable news is that as long as you're making revenue, you can spew whatever BS you want to spew. Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering
because I think that's what we see.
Yeah. Just wondering how long it's going to take because when I say how long it's going to take, I'll explain what I mean in a second. Because as we know, when you watch, like I watch Law and Order, right? It's one of my favorite shows.
Dum dum.
You know, especially Law and Order SVU and even like the new one with Chris Maloney. But I'm usually busy. So, you know, so I don't get to watch it when it happens. I watch it a day or two later on was it either Hulu or Peacock? I got both of them. I don't know what the hell one of them, and I think it's Hulu. And so it gets to the point where, you know, remember there was you'd watch it on TV, then you have the VCR, and then you and then you have the cable would let you record it in the box and all that kind of crap. And now it's all streaming services, so you can look on your phone. At some point, you know. Everything, because everything's starting to become almost a la carte now anyway, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering how long it'll be till they just take that thing and just make it a la carte where they literally have complete control and really don't care what anyone thinks. Because I'm sure a bunch of these dopes will pay. Because I mean, I don't know. Do you have any streaming services yourself?
Yeah, between myself and then shared with family members, I think we've just about got all the boxes checked with streaming services.
I refuse to take more than two or three. I got two now that I pay for. That's it, damn it. Maybe one more, but after that, the hell with it.
Yeah, well, they're cracking down on this, but I have an arrangement with friends and family that pretty much everybody takes on one and you share with the others, so you're not watching the same Marvel superhero show over and over because they only release one every few months. You know, that way we each have the variety accessible, because nobody's a brand loyalist, at least in our crew. But what you bring up is something I have researched a little. I don't have the facts in front of me, but your typical cable news demographic, but especially Fox News, is quite a bit older. We're talking older than baby boomers. So yes, eventually what we've seen happen to like late night television, where James Corden doing Carpool Karaoke, which can be viewed 45 million times the next day on YouTube, is the priority over the greater 1 hour show like a Johnny Carson or David Letterman that we came up on. You know, that was about that hour. You didn't catch that hour and you didn't have a VCR. You didn't see that hour until maybe that's one of the ones that would get repeated during the summer.
That's the...
But now late night is all about, what's that 2 minute clip? And that's, they develop the whole show around that.
You can
so
see
eventually it. News is going to be that. And I don't know if that's better or worse, but that's the attention span.
I'll be honest with you. It's kind of like that now, because a lot of times when you see a news story, it's the 2 minutes and 20 seconds on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no way they don't know that. You know what I mean? It's like, there's no way they don't have a mental clock. Look, you got to get all this information in 2 minutes and 20 seconds. You understand what I'm saying? You know, and because a lot of times, you know, that's how you see. I mean, whenever I see the shootings, but I become aware of the damn shootings that are happening and things of that nature because of my phone goes boop on Twitter all the time.
Yeah. I stopped using volume. Everything is defaulted to no volume on my phone and my tablet. Because I am afraid, because of my social media addiction, I'll be scrolling through Twitter and be forced to watch a murder. And I may not be mentally prepared for that.
Has that happened to you?
So because of that, everything's on vibrate.
Have you been caught like that before?
Have I been murdered? No.
Well, hold on, guys. He's still there. Well, I'm going to keep him on the air for a while and take care of that for me. So, but
ouch.
Have you ever caught anything being online as long as you have? A couple of times, I've been pretty good. I'm pretty savvy at avoiding things I don't want to see that are kind of gross. You know what I mean? I literally didn't see the Cole Brown Simpson crime scene until like last year, because I purposely stayed away from it. And something weird happened while I was clicking on something else, and they just happened to have, I'm like, why? I avoided this since the 90s because I didn't want to see it, right? Yeah. And somehow I was looking for something that had nothing to do with that. Literally nothing to do with that. And then there's this crime scene photo. I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's the thing about the web. It's like, you never know what you're going to see. You know, I remember there was a time I saw they did it on Facebook. I think someone hacked into Facebook or did something to it where they literally were flooding the news feed with car crash photos. You know, and we know what those look like, you know. But it's just as bad in a different way, because when you go on Twitter right now, and if you look up the name of a politician, you know, you know what you're going to see when you scroll down about half a second.
Oh, like a trending topic, and then you end up on porn?
Oh no, I end up on porn on purpose, but
I call this lemon party phenomenon. If you're old enough to really know your internet from the 90s, this was a photo that you would get tricked into clicking on, thinking it's kind of like the Rick Astley music video, except it was elderly men having sex. It was called a lemon party, and you'd get tricked into viewing it. Oftentimes, I will click on a trending topic that sounds like a news item I would be interesting in, and people have taken that hashtag and rolled with it, and it's just like porn and dick pills and
That's one of the
buy my Bitcoin.
Oh God, if I hear that word one more time.
But I haven't been tricked like that since Lemon Party. But the one that comes to mind, and this would have been closer to last time we caught up, was Mike Brown and Ferguson. I remember seeing all sorts of tweets of like, what we're seeing on the ground isn't what you're getting on news. And I would click through and see people's cell phone video of this young man being murdered. So by the time we got to like Mr. Floyd, or pick any hashtag name, there's probably five today. I'm very careful of it because I don't want to be desensitized to seeing someone murdered. I know this phenomenon is happening. Not a phenomenon. I know that this systemic problem is happening. I don't need to see it every day. That's not good for my mental health. So I oftentimes now have not seen the murder we're all talking about, even though everyone has, if that answers the actual question posed, because I just try extra hard not to. I don't want to see faces of death snuff films on a daily basis, and they're there because that's just how horrible our societal norm has become, that it's just part of everyday life. I mean, same with COVID deaths. We're having a 9/11 a week, and yet it's like, hey, let's take our masks off and party.
That is, but isn't it? And when you were talking about being desensitized, it was just amazing because you literally, like you were saying, you go on the news and you'd hear this the number of cases, and you could very quickly do the math in your head, and you would realize how many of those people were going to be dead in a few days. You know, you're going, okay, so that's how many thousand? Okay, so that means like about 1,000 of those people are going to die. Oh, you know, you're sitting there, you know, and I ran into somebody. I was at a supermarket and I had my, this is like in the beginning where we really didn't know anything about it. You know, I mean, this is right, you know, people are just panic. This is back when people were panic buying toilet paper, right?
Yeah.
Which I was like, why are you panic buying toilet paper? What the hell is it? Why are you buying? But there's, I was sitting there and I'm going, well, at first, well, let's be honest, I already had toilet paper, so it was cool. But the thing was, I'm going through the thing and I'm sitting there going, I was very easily, just very casually, just putting food in my cart. And I'm going, if you're stuck in the house, you're probably going to need food.
Right.
So maybe you should be, I'm picking spam up, I'm picking meats up, and people are getting into fights, not fortunately, not physical fights, but more verbal fights, but still, you know, the volume and the level of anger was way above what was necessary. And I'm sitting there going, and I'm watching it, and you just see the world change right in front of you, and you see people who probably wouldn't have acted that way under normal circumstances. Obviously, that exists within them, but you couldn't get to that button unless this combination of things happened. And I don't know, man. I was just sitting back, just I was almost like embarrassed for everybody because, you know. It's like, God, use your brains, man. Use your brain. Just put the mask on. You know what I mean? Wash your hands. It's really not that difficult. Stay in the house. People trying to close talk. You're like, why are you close talking me, dude? I told one dude, I said, dude, social distancing, bro.
I still haven't talked to a lifelong friend for over a year now because when this all started, we're wearing masks. We're in a store. We see each other, and he goes in for a hug. I'm like, whoa, murderer. But that same day, I don't ever take more than I need. That's just how I roll. So I never stocked up on toilet paper. And then we came to this point where I couldn't get any toilet paper. They was not to be had. Mm-hmm. And I go to a Walmart, which if you know me, this is not something I would normally even care to shop at. And of course, all their toilet paper is gone. And I don't know if he just saw the despair in my face, but this fellow who had a cart full of it and was in that stock up mode gave me a month's supply of toilet paper from what he had hoarded. Yes. And I remember feeling grateful that in what I was perceiving was about to be the purge for paper products, human kindness still existed. That the fellow would part from his hoarding to allow me to cleanly escape. And I remember friends calling me and being like, you got to get a bidet. Because they saw me on social media just in deep concern, like, I don't know how I'm going to stay sanitary.
Yeah. Yeah, damn it, I'm going to get one of those anyway. Just get one of those anyway. You know, you'll go to Lowe's and grab one for a couple hundred bucks and, you know, you know. But I talked to a neighbor. It's an older lady and her boyfriend, and I was kind of staying away from them. I liked them, and they're the people that at the corner that you walk by, hey, it's Anthony, hey, and then you go up to the step and you talk for a while, and then her boyfriend comes out, hey, it's Anthony, and we talk for a while. But that didn't happen, mainly because of the COVID thing. And in addition to that, you know, I think he has some kind of, you know, I don't know what he has some kind of problem. I don't know what it is. I mean, a physical problem where I get the feeling that, you know, he might be immunocompromised. She's older, so I just assume she is, you know, and I didn't want to get close to them. And it was a weird thing because I'm used to walking by and having a long conversation with them. Well, I mean, long for a conversation with a neighbor, you know, 10 minutes. I'm not sitting there for an hour.
Yeah, yeah.
But. And I thought, and I was, and this is one of the thoughts that went through my mind, which is really, it's a weird thought, but it was an accurate thought, and it could have been really bad. I had three uncles, they were all sick at the same time. They're all passed. This is a while ago. They all passed. The one we knew, it was like, it was a foregone conclusion. We're just waiting, right? The second one we didn't know, but we kind of knew. And then the third one passed. It was almost like he hung on for the other two. You know what I mean? And I was running around taking them to the chemos and, you know, I was doing all of that stuff for everybody. And I was close to them and they were really good dudes. Right. But the thing about it was, I thought if they had lived another 5 years, I couldn't have gone anywhere near them.
Yeah.
Two were in, one was in hospice. One was going to hospice. The other one was not, but he had a new kidney. So it's like, these are, you know, people I was trying to help take care of. How the hell do you do it? You can't. I couldn't have gotten near them. And the bad part about it was when you watch what COVID was doing to nursing homes and hospice places, this thing would have probably killed two of them. You know what I mean? And maybe gotten the other one. So it's like, geez, man, I was just sitting there thinking about that. And, you know, so that's why when it came time for me to get jammed in the arm, I slid in there as quickly as I could because I was, you know, it's one of those things where I'm glad I'm generally healthy, but I had to wait a long time to, and, you know, the doctor goes, well, when do you get, he said, look, they're not going to come around to you anytime soon. So, she goes, look, I can't, you know, we're just giving it to older people. You know, I can't help you. It's like, as soon as we get some, then we're allowed to give it to you. We will. But if the city or the state calls you or emails you and says it's ready, just jump down there and get it. And that's what I just slid right down there. You know, I don't like to take medicines if I don't have to, but I was like, screw it. I'll take this. I don't give a shit.
I'm immunocompromised. So I was supposed to be able to get the vaccine right away. That was not my experience. It was really hard to get an appointment. And even when I did finally get it, I had to drive nearly an hour spot to get it. And now that I've had two doses and I am kind of excited to experience the world again, my doctor tells me, well, you're immunocompromised. You still need to be careful. Mm. Like, so I don't, at this point in time, I don't even imagine this back to normal people are talking about all around me, because my doctor is telling me, you know, you can't live that way. And I'm like, well, what if we get booster shots? She goes, well, if there are booster shots, yes, you'll take it, but you need to be careful. And she put it into perspective for me, like, you know how in Asia they always wear masks anyhow. Mm-hmm. I said, oh yeah. And it made me realize how not worldly Americans tend to be, that, you know, masks are some oppressive state to some people, when a good third of the world, that's every day during cold and flu season, let alone a global pandemic. So now I'm a little more comfortable, like, yeah, okay, I mask up. I still can't, you know, go to an indoor concert, but I would prefer to keep doing other stuff. So I guess I can live like this. But I had to think about it in that worldly state that people protect themselves from breathing in germs all over the world. It's just not something Americans have done until about a year ago. And I'm hopeful that we can adapt and do that. I mean, look how low flu cases were. Even the common cold was the lowest it had been in 20 years because we were being a little bit safer about just sharing breathable air. I don't know. We could go off on infrastructure bill. Does that mean we get better HVAC in schools and in community buildings? I mean, there's a lot of different ways that this could be done that people could feel safer. But the most simple is to just not breathe shared air as easily. You know, we wear condoms, we wear masks.
Speaking of the bill, we have a Manchin and Sinema on the phone right now.
Oh, Manchin, Sinema. You know, another thing that they do around the world is they have no problem with street justice or having Parliament end up in fist fights.
I just
really like to see fist fights come to Congress.
Well, everybody's 90, so no, you don't. that would be like, eh. Oh yeah, well, how about this? Eh. you ever watch these the old guy fights on YouTube? You know, it's like two 90-year-olds missing each other. You know, because it's just a strange thing, because I'm sitting there going, you really don't see that this is a bad thing, that people can't. They're trying to stop people from voting. That doesn't seem like a bad thing to you. Bridges falling down, that doesn't matter at all. Then you don't notice that. You're not, schools, high speed internet for people, and you don't notice any of those things. You don't think those are good things. It's like, you know, that's the thing, that talk about cutting off the nose to spite your face. I never understood anybody that, when I watch politics now, it's just one of those things where, and same thing with big businesses, is that evil, when you watch it in the movies, in many cases, has a limit to it. You know what I mean? But you're sitting there going, it's like, well, you really don't have enough money? Really? I'm not saying I want to limit your money. I don't want it from the outside or anything like that, but you don't really think you have enough that you could calm down a little bit, you know, maybe pay the workers a little more money, you know, a little health care there. You know, if you have the buying power, sell a television for $79, then you have the buying power to get, you know, if you have that kind of power. Because remember when Walmart decided they wanted to sell medicine, what happened to the prices of medicine? Mm. You know, Yeah, we're going to sell medicine. Oh, yeah, $100. No, I'm going to sell it for $5. But shut up. We're selling it for $5. Okay. We got to figure out a way to make it possible for the greedy people to make money by actually helping people. Then everything changes all of a sudden. That's the only way to get them to move.
Well, every other developed nation has figured out how to keep prescription costs low and make healthcare a right of the citizenry. So it's always strange to me that when it comes, oh, that's un-American. So it's American. Let me get this straight. It's American to let people suffer or die of preventable disease because they're poor. They're working for a wage that hasn't been increased in over 20 years. That's American. But we're the greatest country on earth. Like, these things don't measure up. It makes me think of the Carlin, I think it's Carlin quote of, if voting changed anything, it would be illegal. When we were talking, you mentioned voting rights. Mm-hmm. Well, so now it must actually, I maybe believe in voting a little bit more because they're trying to make it illegal.
that is, I mean, it's just so, it's so easy. I mean, why are we standing in line? You know, why are we even having the mail stuff? I mean, come on, man. You know what I mean? This, you know, it's like the $6 million man. We have the technology. We can do it. We can do it better than it was. You know, come on, man. You know, it's like we have bank accounts. We have cell phones. We have social security numbers. We have all of these ways. If you really want to find us, you can. If you have a student loan, they'll find you in the bathroom. All of these ways that they can just lock you down. But when it comes to voting, I got to stand in line at 6 o'clock in the morning.
I lived in Colorado for years, and they've been doing mail-in voting for years, where the ballot comes to the house. Mm-hmm. I fill it out. I drop it in the mail, and I can track it all the way to the point it's been counted online.
I voted by mail. Go ahead.
It's easy. Mm-hmm. It's simple, and it encourages people to participate in what we still somehow call democracy.
that was my first time voting by mail. And I'm telling you right now, I absolutely loved it. I'm sitting there going, why in the blue hell? Cause I used to get up. I vote all the time. So it was like, I would always get up 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, no, I would be getting there at 6 o'clock. I'd get there early in the morning. I'd be sitting in my car. It's cold outside. And then I jump out of the car. The last few times in my district, I was like, it was like I was first, second, you know, person to vote in the whole area. So I just get it done. But I would love, I mean, when that thing came into me, I went, oh, this is perfect. Open it up, made sure I did everything perfectly. Cause I knew there was a good chance that some jackass was going to start looking at the ballots. And I was like, yeah, well, you're not going to get this one out from a technicality. And then mailed it in. It was like, oh, but like I said, if you owe anything, they will call your house with your name, you know, they will follow you around, but all of a sudden, when I got to vote, I got to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning for work. You got to rush home from work. You got to stand in line. You would get some water, but that's illegal now. And
that's something I have a huge issue with, is this making it illegal to hand out water or to send food. I always looked at it like I'm privileged enough to be in a district I can vote by mail, or so when I'm in my hometown, it's such a small area that there's not even going to be a line on the busiest of days, that when I see people in these precincts that, you know, they've closed 10 polling locations, so 11 locations are voting in one spot and they're all still in line 2 hours before close, and there's hundreds of people bunched up just trying to vote, I always click on the link to get some pizzas out there. Mm-hmm. It's not a political notion. It's a, oh my gosh, these people are suffering to do what I did easily. Mm-hmm. I got to send some food their way.
Yeah, it's like.
And now that's illegal.
Yeah, I mean, it's like they're turning voting into fear factor all of a sudden. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, hang over this burning card. If you can hold on, you get your ballot. You get to get in line to vote. And I never...
Yeah, they'll be taking your DNA. Hold on. We've got to see if you are who you say you are.
Oh, is he going to swab my mouth? No, through the ass. Wait a second. You know, they're going to make it as bad as possible. We have to do it via the ass in front of everyone. I can't stand it. You know, because it's, I just remember when earlier we were talking about things that when the big societal things like with the masks and things of that nature that change, where you literally can see a physical change, But I still remember when I remember January 6th, TV was on. And I really didn't know what I was looking at first. Because I really wasn't paying attention because I was like, I thought it was a protest outside, you know, and then I started looking, I'm going, they're on the walls in the windows. What in the blue hell is this? Never thought I'd ever see that in my lifetime.
I guess I have a different internet experience than you because I knew it was coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually angry that nobody was taking it seriously because I kept seeing people were like, I saw this on Facebook. They're going to be trying to storm the Capitol. And this is a week leading up to it. And I'm like, why isn't there a plan? I mean, you could shut this down pretty quick. It doesn't matter who's president or who's in charge of the Secret Service or the FBI. This is how we, law enforcement has no problem busting up, tear gassing a Black Lives Matter protest.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about guys spreading around flyers on Facebook to arm yourself and go into the nation's capital and try and hunt a black or brown congresswoman. And it seems to me we could stop that.
Yeah, and that's the funny. I didn't see what you're describing right there, and I think what might have been happening was there are periods where I'm kind of in and out of the internet, just like when you said you needed to take a mental cleanse, right?
Yeah.
And in this particular case, I mean, I remember when Obama was in, it was like threat. So I'm sitting there, these guys, and if I don't know why, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, I know there's a bunch of scumbags out there that'll do awful things to people. It happens in the neighborhood. It happens everywhere. But there was a part of me that was going, you know, I hear some of this stuff, but it's like, are they really, really going to try to rush the cap? I mean, I know what I really thought was going to happen. I thought there'd be, I thought the worst that would happen, because it was a part of me, I guess because I don't have an interest in injuring people. That's not part of, you know, my DNA, to injure someone that is not trying to injure me. And I'm sitting there going, because before that, I heard these things, but sometime I maybe it was just like hoping for the best. I mean, if I was working inside the Capitol, if I was responsible for it, oh my, believe me, you know, that let's just say that wouldn't have happened. I would have been ready for it, right? Because I don't think they would have done it if there was like the National Guard standing around. I don't think they would have tried that.
Right.
But the simple fact that there was like, they didn't have anywhere near, didn't they have less people there than they normally have? Wasn't it?
I don't know. I did see the pictures of Capitol Police like holding the ropes up to let these guys in.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really understand. And without the commission some people are calling for, we probably won't have a solid view of it because we only have what we know from the internet. Which is flawed in its most basic scale. But I do know that these people, racists are violent by nature. I remember when I worked in journalism, covering Obama's DNC, accepting the nomination in 2008,
mm-hmm.
and talking outside, Veterans for Peace were putting together a march against war in the Middle East and hoping that Obama would pull out of Iraq and Afghanistan, and talking to what were Secret Service, but off the record, about the threats that they had been dealing with. This was in Denver, 2008, from white supremacists not wanting to see a black man become a party's nominee. And it from talking to these guys wasn't just the couple that had made the news that had like cars of explosives, but like this was a major every few minutes thing of having to shut down some white supremacist plot to kill the candidate. Mm-hmm. And of course, we just saw that explode. And listen, I'm not even an Obama fan politically, but I felt like we had to at least defend against the birth certificate and the just blatantly racist attacks, mm-hmm. because that shouldn't be his legacy. Unfortunately, I think that still is going to end up being the guy's legacy, is all the racist BS he had to go through just to exist as the president. Anyhow, that's how I realized these are violent people. So as we were gearing up to and watching the Capitol riots, the insurgency, I was praying, and literally praying, like talking to God, asking him to protect the black and brown women of Congress, because mm-hmm. I feared that there was going to be a slaughter. I was scared. I'm glad I was wrong.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Cause AOC came really close.
Yeah.
From what she said on Instagram. Yeah. Very similar to that idiot that came in to the store, had the argument with the person behind the register, walked out and came back and shot the person. You sit there and you're sitting there going, when you thought of this as something you were going to do, what exactly did you think the overall outcome would be? And what did you think the effect would be on you?
Well, they hold each other up as champions. Look at that couple that came out to their Black Lives Matter protesters marching by their house.
No, those two
and
dopes.
They came out with a semi-assault rifle unprovoked, and now that guy's running for I think Congress and probably raking in all sorts of dough. When I'm not even going to mention his name, ran over Heather Hoyer at a protest, he immediately had $1 million on GoFundMe from fellow racists.
Yeah. And that little dweeb with the rifle.
Yeah, they hold each other up as champions when really they're the problem. And that's putting it quite mildly.
Yeah. I mean, it's just weird. Because, I mean, the simple fact that I don't know. I mean, it just reminded me of like with 9/11, you know, I was in Philly at the time, and I'm just like watching it on TV, you know what I mean? The kind of thing that you just, even though I know that people had tried to blow the building up a bunch of times, still sometimes there's a part of you that doesn't think that airplanes are going to crash into buildings like that. You know what I mean?
To that point, we didn't.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And I didn't even think in terms of, I was like, man, you know, because the thing is, I have friends that had relatives in there. You know what I mean? I had friends that died in there. So I know what it's like to sit there with a friend crying in my lap because a relative was in there or a friend was in there. You know, so it affected me directly, not me directly, but through them, because I didn't have any friends or relatives in the building. I had friends who had friends and relatives in those buildings. So you know, every time I see the film, every time I watch it, it's like, oh, and I go right back to that moment where, you know, somebody breaks down right in front of you and you're hugging somebody, and, you know, and I imagine this is got to be very similar to the people that were in the Capitol building. Cause you know, you walk right back in the building, you literally just had, I mean, they had to go back that night and they had this traumatic experience. They go right back into the building.
Yeah.
And they have to go back there every day. And every time they walk through there, they have to, I mean, I remember I got carjacked years ago. And, you know, gun to the head, you got to get out the way for the person to shoot you because, you know. And when I got the car back from the police, you know, I was kind of looking at it like, you know, and, you know, it's like, and I was like, you know what, F that, I'm driving it. And I literally drove right back to the store I got carjacked in front of and bought some stuff. You know what I mean? So I was like, no, baby, you're not taking this store away from me. You're not taking this car away from me. But I did feel weird because that was the traumatic place. And then the traumatic place, I was actually sitting in the traumatic place, the car, and then went back to the traumatic location. And I wanted to, you know, take care of that. But when I see this, I mean, this is, it's like being in the Matrix. You know, you saw the movie The Matrix, correct?
Yeah.
You know, when, you know, Morpheus is talking to Neo and he goes, "Were you looking at the girl in the red dress?" And he turns back around and it's an agent holding a gun to his face. Mm-hmm. That's what Facebook feels like to me sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, people that I knew and know, and I'm like, "Hey, what's going on, buddy?" Then you go to their page, "Hey, let's connect on Facebook," and you scroll down and you look at the stuff and you're going, you know, I'm a black dude, right? So, you know, so like, you know, some of the stuff I'm seeing here, you know what I'm saying? You know, would affect me directly. You know what I mean? Would affect my relative directly. So, you know, just saying, if the things you were wanting to happen on this page, the things you're sharing, if those things actually happen, it's going to drastically lower my safety and my relative safety. Yeah, we're not going to be friends on Facebook or in person.
And I think that's appropriate to weed out your friends, virtual or in real life, based on not just political values, but whether they value as a human being. And there's studies on this. And obviously, as you just said, this is your lived experience, but there are studies on this that the phenomena of PTSD, and to make it hopefully relatable, I was mugged 20 years ago. I still, to this day, will wake up in a panic from having a nightmare about just walking through that alley in my dream.
Mm-hmm.
There are studies on this that a large portion of the black community lives with a variant of PTSD just because of their lived experience of being black in America.
Well, let me help you out with that.
Yep. Please do. Like I said, this is your lived experience.
And let me help you out with that. Yep.
it's a one word. It's an amen.
Yeah, you know, I was talking to another friend who was on the show, and he actually talked off. He called me a couple times after the show was over to ask me a couple of questions. But it was like I was explaining it to him. No, I'll leave him out of that for a second. It was a friend of mine in L.A. And if you actually looked, and if you actually typed in "white guy," it would be a picture of this dude. you know what I mean. You know, and I keep in mind, I actually said that to him. I was like, "Dude," I said, "Keith, if they actually, well, there was no Google back then. If they actually looked in the encyclopedia for a white guy, there'd be a picture of you there." And we started laughing, and he believed me when I told him how the police were treating me at the time. But there's believing and then there's seeing, and. Yeah. I said, "I want you to hang back a little bit." And I said, "I'm, you know," I said, "I want you to just watch what happens." And I said, "You drive around the block." "Okay, you know, get out. Let me get back in front of them. I'll drive my car." And he noticed the way, it's like, "You drove exactly the same way I did. And who got pulled over?" And, you know, and who did the guy come to the door? He had antagonism going before I rolled the window down. You know, and then he calmed down when I started talking to him, because I guess he expected. I mean, I always sounded like this. You know what I mean? So I guess he was expecting something else. And he was kind of disappointed that I wasn't like throwing it back at him, so he'd have a reason to either beat us up or give us a ticket. And I'm not saying that that's all the police, because I just said this to somebody a little while ago. The majority of my interactions with the police officers in my lifetime, in my entire life, 52 years on the planet, have been positive. But the 56 times, probably close to 70 now, the 70 times it wasn't positive, it was really not positive. So you don't go, "Hey, I most of the time when I go down the steps, it's fine." But what about when someone pushes you down the steps and you break your arm? You remember that, because that's the traumatic experience, you know? So, you know, and it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's just a weird thing that you live in two different worlds. You get treated two different ways. It's the same way with a lady. A lady doesn't want to go across the street to that store at a certain time of night because she doesn't feel safe. As a dude, I'm not even thinking about it, you know? But I also sit back and I go, and I wouldn't go, oh, come on, I don't feel like going to the store. Nothing happens to me when I go to the store. So why don't you just run across that dark street by yourself, 5 foot two, 106 pound woman? You know what I mean? It would never occur to me to do that. It would never occur to me to be in an operating room with your wife having a baby going, you know, my genitals don't hurt, so I don't know why you're screaming.
You know? Well, and that's another area of PTSD and why women of color don't want to go to the doctor even when they're in pain and things is because statistically they're believed less. So they have this negative interpretation of the process. And it's the same thing as a black person being pulled over. You tell a white person you're going to shop at this store once a week and every 10th time you're going to get punched in the face, they probably want a different store. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you don't have the choice of a different society to exist in. So we have to change how the store operates. And it's, you can't get that through the heads of some people. They like the idea that every 10th purchase comes with a punch in the face. They like the punch card.
Yeah. You know what's hilarious though? And I think that people, I don't think people tend to understand it. That's why a lot of times you see these politicians that they don't pay it either. I mean, I'm not talking about the straight up over the top out in your face evil. I'm talking about the ones that are just willfully ignorant, you know, or they hide their bigotry. And something will happen to someone that does not look like them or doesn't believe what they believe or whatever. And they don't believe it. And then something will happen similar. A similar thing will happen to them or a loved one. And then all of a sudden they're on the news. I really believe that this thing should be changed because it happened to my daughter. Guys, you have to understand that the people who are poor or the disenfranchised or minority groups or minority, they are always the canary in the coal mine. And they don't understand that if you allow people to do these things to them, eventually it will come back to you. You got to understand that. And they don't get it. And that's why they don't understand until, you know, they get dragged out of the car or until, you know, someone doesn't let them move someplace or until something bad happens to them. They don't get it because it doesn't apply to them. It's not part of their reality. So they don't understand it. And like you said, some of them are like, good, I don't like you anyway. You know, I want bad things to happen to you.
Yeah, it's unfortunately part of the human condition that often we don't adjust until it's too late. And this is one of those areas that it's way too late. Look at all the countless lives that have been lost to systemic racism. To you mentioned what women go through. Look at statistics of something like 7 out of 10 women have had some sort of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. That's too late. It's all too late. If we don't fix it fast, I don't see any hope for us as a society. And this is where I was hoping not to get too doom and gloom for you this week. But that's just where my headspace is that we've failed. Mm. And unless there's something drastic to change the tide, I just don't even know how we keep going.
Okay. Well, let's jump off the doom and gloom for a moment and let's talk about what's going on with you, Mr. Salamone. What's going on? What's happening in the daily life? The good stuff that's happening to you right now, because something good's happening, damn it. And I want to know what it is.
Ooh, so do I. as I mentioned, I'm still forced into hermitude by my healthcare provider, which I'm trying to be okay with. But so that means that there's not a lot going on with Mr. Salamone. I still occasionally have a podcast. I have a really wonderful little dog.
What'd you get?
I make music. Oh, several years ago, I never thought I would want a little dog, but there was in this network of people we have that they tell you when there's animals up for adoption. There was this cute little dog that really needed a home fast, and I hate putting a gender on the dog. She has the name Penny, and I guess has always been referred to as a she, but she lifts her leg when she pees. I'm just not sure she wants to identify with the pronoun I'm attaching to her, and I feel a little guilty when I do. But anyhow, and I make music. I'm just doing everything I can to stay afloat, but my existence is very boring right now. We do some feeding of shut-ins who have it worse than I do with the hermitude. I've really had a wonderful experience getting to know local farmers and getting what food we could get from them throughout this year. That's good to me because I enjoy the whole idea of eat local. But yeah, it's dull, man. It's the rock and roll lifestyle that I would have been able to report on years ago is no more.
What kind? You said little dog, but you didn't tell me what is a beagle.
Oh, it's a mutt. I guess there's some terrier in there.
Okay. So
that's about the only thing we know, but she's just a shaggy little
terrier. A little bit of an attitude problem going on there.
No,
and someone new shows up.
No, she's none of that. Other than the curiosity will get the best of her if I don't. Oftentimes her walks are in the woods, and if there's another animal out there and she's not on a leash.
Oh, that nose! Yeah, the nose makes him.
And that's when you know she's a terrier. She's got that bouncy run of a terrier, but she just looks like a mutt. Just a fuzzy faced, cute little mutt.
Are you going to? I mean, you said you were dealing with the farmers. Are you growing things? Do you have the ability or the space or anything like that to grow some stuff yourself?
Yeah, I grew up with a great grandfather who was big on gardening and learned everything that really you need to know. And then spent some time working at a botanic gardens and have been really passionate about things. I generally grow things like tomatoes or something that I know I'm always going to use. I can, et cetera. Really other than herbs and tomatoes, I don't go too crazy, but I feel like if we do go full blown apocalypse, I know how to do that. Like I can grow, eat, can it for winter, survive. There are people nearby that have eggs and meat, and all the things you could want that I feel really confident that if full-blown apocalypse comes, that we'll have a barter system in place and everybody will stay fed and happy, and we'll help people that don't have those resources in the community. And that's the thing. There's the positive. That's the positive. COVID has taught me that even without the community of a tangible hanging out, being with people, that people do care, and we will rally to make sure everybody has enough. At least that's my personal experience that I'm quite grateful for, is that people are taking care of each other, and hopefully I did my part.
It's amazing. Is that when you were talking about that, though, everyone, they have eggs, you have this, they have lettuce, they have, it's like, the closest thing to in the city for that is when you would go to a locally sourced pop-up farmer's market that would show up every Saturday, you know, and you would see the same people all the time, you know, and, you know, somebody would be selling paintings and they'd be, you know, and they would start that. And if people haven't had the experience of that, that little bit of a community that builds from that, because, you know, you show up, you know, I'm walking in and the guy sees me, he automatically pulls up the grapes. You know what I mean? It's like he knows what I buy. I walk, hey, it's Anthony. I know what you want. Yes, Mr. Johnson. Grapes, lettuce, spinach. You know, he knows what I'm going to bring. I already know it's going to cost $22. So I got $22 in my hand. And then you become friends with all of the people. And, you know, it's kind of, a, you know, I get that. So you have a version of that. Except you're actually there with the farmers. These are the people that were actually just, I think those people actually did grow. I'm pretty sure those people actually did grow the food, to be honest with you, when I think back on it. But, you know, I'll be honest with you, I kind of dig that whole aspect of it, because it's really, really cool. And a lot of times the people that are really doing things with their hands and growing and cultivating and nurturing, they tend to be, in many cases, really, really cool people to be around.
And just people who appreciate that. I remember when I lived in a city, I always belonged to a CSA, a community supported agriculture project. Mm-hmm. And that means you pay a bulk amount, and every week you go pick up a box of farm growing foods. Mm-hmm. And I used to love doing the pickup, because at the end, after you get through the line, it's like a swap meet where you're talking to all the other people who are picking up their food. Like, you know, I don't really know what to do with all this kale. You know, I don't know what to do with all this squash. Trade around. And I, not only do I love produce and locally grown food, but I love barter system. Mm-hmm. I love economy without cash. I maybe this is being
Bitcoin,
an artist.
Bitcoin.
especially when I was a young musician, I would do gigs for food all the time. Like, I'll play your happy hour, you give me a nice dinner, kind of trades. My whole life, I love barter. But I made so many friends from that CSA pickup. I mean, there are people I still check in with to this day that I really only know from a weekly pickup of food. Mm-hmm. There's a sense of community around stuff.
I was surprised at how often these micro friendships turn into real friendships, because you get a little teeny piece of the person each time you see them. You know, it's like a drop of water hitting a bucket. And if you've had a leak in your house, you know, you see that drop. That's not that much. You wake up in the morning, the damn bucket's almost full. And I think those friendships are just like that. You get a little bit of information. Now you know the wife's name. Now you know the kid's name. The kid plays piano. That kid plays football. This kid. And all of a sudden, you know everything about that person. They know everything. Well, a lot about that person. They know a lot about you. And you already like them because of the interactions. And then you realize, oh, good Lord, I guess I'm friends with these people. And it's kind of cool. It's like, you know, I made friendships with people when I worked in an office. I saw the dude in an elevator for 7 minutes a morning, 5 days a week, because it took that long to get up to the floor we worked on. I never saw him outside of that place, but we actually would wait for the other one to get in. I was like, I'm not getting in the elevator now. He's not here. There he is. Get on the elevator. And then you'd go up, and then you're sitting there waiting to go down. We get off at the same time, work in different offices, but we get off at the same time. Hey, and you ride down. So it's like, oh, actually it's more like 14 minutes a day. But it was like, you know, I still know some of those people. This is 16, I think it's the 16th century that this happened, you know, and I still know
these
folks. I think
about that stuff a lot though, because you always see people complain about, oh, how do I make friends as an adult? And there's a difference of, like, when you're young, you make friends based on who's around. Mm-hmm. Well, when you're an adult, you're not put into those, you're not forced to go to school or into situations where you just meet people. So you have to do something that interests you and then gradually get to know people. And I personally think those friendships can be much deeper because they come from a much more real place of shared interest than, oh, we went to grade school. We rode a bus together to this place that made us read.
Yeah, here's some lies. So, and we're going to want you to memorize them. But the thing is, when you were talking about the barter system, you're a musician, I'm a comedian. Believe me, I can relate to that. Yeah. I've done shows, you know, every comic has gone through this. I don't know if it's the same now for the new people, but it probably is, where you're starting out and the guy goes, you know, I can give you a sandwich if you want. Yeah.
And that's a good pay for a comic.
Yeah. I was like, yeah.
Normally you have to give him a sandwich to get up on stage, right?
Yeah. I was like, look, I don't have any more mustard, bro. You're only getting 6 minutes, then, you bastard. So, but that was, I mean, we literally in the beginning, because the thing is, you went to the place and they didn't really have a lot of money for you to begin with, because it was a weekday or something. They had, you know, 28 people in the audience. And basically you got you know, because let's be honest, there's a budget for breakage and spillage, and there's a budget for marketing where they, you know, they'll pass out food. So it falls within that margin of, I can afford to give these five dudes sandwiches, or these five people sandwiches. I can afford to do that. So they'll throw you a sandwich. You weren't expecting to get anything. You know, you expecting to go, and it cost me how much in gas to get here? I got to practice, so I got to go. And it goes, hey, it's a sandwich. I'm getting some stuff. I'll take it. Gonna get a soda. You weren't that good, buddy. You're not gonna get a soda too. You're gonna have to drink water. I don't like that last bit about the car. The thing you did about the car didn't work. So we're gonna have to take that soda back. yours worked, but you give him some ice. This was good. But I can relate to that in completely. You know. And the barter system, like I said, I agree with it, I understand it, and I want to thank you for finally shipping that guitar to me that I'm using to allow you on the show. It's really good. It looks good. I don't know. I didn't expect you to sing this good of a guitar, but you know that's why I'm letting you stay on the show this time, because the guitar that most people don't realize that I had Michael mail me one of his guitars, or that's why he hasn't been on the show in a while. It had nothing to do with the fact that I wasn't doing interviews. It was all waiting for Michael to send me that guitar.
I actually got my dream guitar this year on barter.
Oh,
I did some graphic design work and earned my guitar I've lusted over for years, but would never spend the money on myself because I'm not that. I just don't do that. I don't take care of myself. But just a weird thing is I didn't feel comfortable charging them. I told them to look at my wish list, assuming they would pick like a $50 item, and I got my dream guitar as a gift. It was lovely. And now S. Anthony has it.
I was going to say, man. Got to do what I got to do, man. I don't even play guitar, but I'll take it. You know, do you play a lot, or do you still play? You still play a lot? Pull out the amp, put on the headphones, and
I try and play every day, which means I play about three times a week. But I still record a lot of music, but that's multi-instrumental, and guitar is I love guitar. It's something that's been with me forever and is just part of who I am. And I just the other day put an amp on the porch, plugged in like a wireless guitar thing, and was chasing the dog around the yard while practicing, just to kill two birds with one stone. But I haven't gigged in a while. Obviously COVID means I haven't been out there for a while, and that's maybe the only bucket list thing that I've still got. People don't know me anyhow, so you don't know this about me. I'm very fortunate Peter Pan type individual. I've just happily wandered through life and done really everything I ever wanted to do. But I want to gig again. I want to get out and play some music again once my doctor says that's okay.
Yeah, I can relate, because I was just talking to a comic friend, and she's like, I don't know. You know, she's episode 100. She's like, I'm not sure. You know, she's more of a germaphobe, but she openly admits that. She's like, and I'm not really like that, but there's a part of me that's, and I said it to her. I said, I feel kind of guilty because I'm watching friends go out and perform, and I'm sitting there going, yeah, enjoy that guinea pig action. I want to see if
a lot of my comic friends are out there getting on stage again, and I'm kind of secretly following their Twitters more intently to see if anybody gets sick or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. You're secretly following. I'm openly going, I'm going to see a few people fall off the stage vomiting on yourself before I go out there. when comics are talking to comics, there's none of that nicety crap. I'm going, yeah, how you doing? Do me a favor. After that gig, keep away from me for 14 days, okay? Stay the hell away from me. And
when you think of a comedy club, you don't think well-ventilated.
Oh, God, no. They're stabbed. I mean, they cram those people in there. I mean, the seats are comfortable, but it's like being on an airplane in coach in some places, you know? Yeah. So they just kind of cram you in like that, and everyone's breathing towards, like, hey, it's a 200, 300, or 400 people that I don't know breathing in my face for an hour, all breathing towards me. Yeah.
Laughing, projecting their spit while they laugh.
Oh, God. Yeah, because the lady last night, she says she puts a thing over the microphone when she performs, and she wasn't kidding. And I'm saying, because and there's people that take the microphone right to their face like this, which I hate, because I'm like, stop drawing. You see, and when the light's coming on, you can see the spittle come out and land on the microphone, and you're going, oh, God.
Yeah.
So what are you guys doing about this? Anthony's going to come up here next, and he's going to hold the mic the right way, but I'm going to put this thing basically down my throat and talk like this.
I, for years, have carried around microphone disinfectant spray because I had gone to a karaoke night and saw the guy who runs it spraying the mics every once in a while and didn't even know this product existed. And now it's in every guitar, keyboard, you name it, instrument case. I have a little spray bottle of this stuff.
Yeah, because we used to do it at the end of the show. Well, I didn't do it, but they used to do it at the end of the show, and I'm sitting there going, "Yeah, is there any way you could do that after, like my is it? Could you hand it to the opening act and have
him spray it? Use it?
Yeah, it's like I'm gonna have to use that thing for like an hour. So is there any way you could spray that thing up there? and this is before COVID. It was like. This guy's on stage here with a cold. I'm like, anyway, guys, what do you do for a living? I'm like, why is he even, people in the front row are leaning away from, so it was just like a funny thing to watch that kind
like
of thing.
Like a Gallagher show.
Oh, it was, yeah. Yeah, Splooge-o-matic or, Loogie-o-matic instead of Sledge-o-matic.
Sledge-o-matic.
Loogie-o-matic. But that was just a weird thing, though. So, before we go, I want to find out about a couple more things before I let you go. Now, you said the podcast itself, you're doing you don't have a regular schedule. You just kind of pop in when you got a guest.
Yeah. So a lot of political podcasts, they want you to subscribe and have a Patreon for special stuff. I don't want your money. If you've got money right now, I'm really hoping you're giving it to food banks and helping your neighbor. And so the contract there that affords me that like right now, I just don't feel up to it. So I haven't done it for a couple of weeks and it allows me to really only do it when there are guests that I want to speak to. So we've had some, I think, pretty impressive guests since we've been back on. Comes to mind, Ben Cohen from Ben and Jerry's was on recently. Lee Camp from Redacted Tonight. Comedy news program. Hopefully you'll come back on. It's been a few years once I pick it back up. But I decided that I don't want to fake it. I don't want to charge people. Luckily, I've got a nice subscriber base built up from over all the years we've done it sporadically. And the contract is that I don't want your donations. I'm not going to sell you anything. There's no ads. And then I just get to do it when it's right. So you subscribe, you get the notification, you listen. Nobody's nagging you for $5 a month.
Okay. I lied. I mean, I didn't lie. I miscounted. I said there was two more things I wanted to talk to you before I let you go. There's three. There's one more. Uh-oh. And the second one is the music. I was on your website, and you have a streaming.
What was it? Well, you should be able to stream all my albums on the website. It's one of those things that I haven't looked at in a while, but hopefully all the albums are still up there, and you can stream them, and they're all on like streaming services like Spotify and Deezer and all that stuff. But yeah, I put out at least a handful of albums are still out, but there was a period where I was putting out an album every year for over 10 years, but I think only 5 or 6 of them are still passable enough to be out there still. And I've got one I've been working on, but whether that'll get released or not, we don't know.
Now, this is the bonus question. I forgot to ask you about this a long time ago. Because I remember teasing you about it, if I remember correctly. What's the deal with the damn check mark on Twitter?
Oh, Why am I verified?
So yeah, no, not why, but how did that happen? why is like, well, you stink. How'd you get one? You suck. That's the thing. But my,
well, that has come up. It was why, because I think anything that people would know me for was pretty much prior to the internet, and it's so far in the past. I'm not gonna brag on myself for almost making it all those years ago, but when I got into doing political podcasting, and I was doing it once or twice a week, and we were in full throw around 2016, just before Trump was tortured us for 4 years. I was a big Bernie guy, and somebody in the Clinton camp, we presume, was impersonating me, not just on Twitter, but across social media.
Okay.
And Twitter verified me because I am the real Michael Salamone, not the fake Michael Salamone that was trying to mess with me.
Or are you?
We'll never know.
No, the reason what I was really, I think I remember that. But what is the process to them? I mean, did they go, did you have to do something, or did they come to you?
Tim Black, who's a well-known YouTube personality and a comedian, who does politics, he and I are friends, and he had recently been verified and was concerned that at this point, I just put out, I think, two albums that year, and the podcast was doing quite well. Mm-hmm. And he saw it was distressing me, and he put me in touch with a form of some sort I could fill out.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm remembering that right. And then Twitter got in touch with me, and they needed my license to prove who I was.
They did that to me on Facebook. They did it to me on Facebook.
Yeah, I think I'm remembering that correctly. I haven't Facebooked since 2016, but I was verified there, and I think it was a similar process of a license. But anyhow, yeah, they just touched base, made sure I was who I was, and then I think they also banned the account that was impersonating me, which was nice because that was less harassment.
Well, the bad news, the good news is that you're verified, and that at least you now can, you know, people know that it's actually you. The bad news is the fake Mike Salamone actually sent me a better guitar. His guitar is, I mean, I was like, man, a Fender. Wow, this guy's the greatest. And it says the real Michael on there. I was like, oh, that's not, I don't think that's Michael Salamone, but I'll take two guitars. I don't care.
Yeah, well, the fake Michael Salamone probably was being bankrolled by somebody, and the real one has always tried to be as indie as possible. So.
it's just a weird thing where you get to the point where you're above the surface, and then all of a sudden you have these people, you know, a machine, because that's not just a guy being an ass, that's a machine.
Yeah, it was pretty coordinated back then. I mean, I was getting death threats. There was an MMA fighter who told me that if he saw me at the DNC that year, he was going to curb stomp my skull into the sidewalk. It was hard. So I backed off quite a bit on social media since then, and that's when I took a long hiatus from the podcast. But you know, I don't want to be famous, so I definitely don't want to deal with all that hatred and cruelty that comes along with people who put themselves out there. But I definitely have learned that I don't throw punches at people, because you never know what people are going through. Whether they have a blue check mark or not, they're a human being. I don't understand it, why you would want to harass a stranger, but there are people out there that are into that sort of thing. And I was grateful to the service to protect me as much as they could.
And I just want to say before we go, this is very, very important. There's been a lot of political talk on this particular podcast, which I normally don't do, but I wanted to do with Michael. And I want to let everybody know that if you're angry about that, I disagree with everything Mike said. It's all him. Any kind of crazy theories that you believe, as long as it keeps me from getting yelled at, I'm cool with it. And So I just want to let you guys know right now that I believe all the crazy stuff. And in fact, I, you know, Mike is just so wrong. So wrong. Okay. And sorry I had to throw you under the bus there, bro.
Always but, a pleasure, sir.
And sorry I had to throw you under the bus there, bro, but I got my guitars. The hell with you. And
no, I don't even want to do stuff like this, but because I have so much esteem for you, I said yes. So I hope that there was at least something usable.
Okay.
Something entertaining.
Now you're making me feel bad. You know, okay, you know what? You can send 10% of the anger to me and just the other 90% to Mike. I'm going to take 10% of it. And the thing is, I really do. I mean, I do appreciate you coming on because we, like I said, we had the conversation before, and it was really weird because sometimes when you're interacting with someone on social media, time goes by so quickly. And I looked and I said, and I was like, I haven't had Michael on in a while. And I looked and was like, good God, man. I saw how much time had gone by and I was like, nah. And literally, like the moment I saw how long it has been, that's when I sent you the message. I was like, I can't, this is ridiculous. And then that's when I sent you the message. So I appreciate you coming on, my friend.
Grateful to talk with you anytime. It is one of those things that you feel like you're in contact because you see posts, but yeah, mm-hmm. It's been too long. So grateful to have some time to chat with you.
Thank you, my brother. And we will continue to harass each other online, as always. And thank you for coming on, my brother. Much appreciated.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, take care, my brother. All right. Now, that was fun, wasn't it? Told you. What did I tell you? Have I failed you yet? No. Will I fail you? Also, no. Thanks again for all your support. Much love to everybody, and I'll see you again next time. Take care.